So in chapters 17 through 21, we're going to break this down into two main divisions. We have chapters 17 through 18, and this starts talking about Micah and his idols. And then we'll see that he has a Levite that becomes his priest. And then the idols and the Levite are taken from Micah in Ephraim. And then we'll see that this is taken by the tribe of Dan. And they conquer Laish and call it Dan. And then they set up these images there. So we'll see that in 17 and 18. And then we'll get into chapters 19 through 21, where we're going to see that due to the rape and abuse of the Levite's concubine, Israel wages war against the tribe of Benjamin. And the tribe was almost eliminated. So a plan was devised on how to repopulate the tribe. We'll see that at the end of chapter 21. So we split it up into basically those two sections. So in all of these chapters, well, except for chapter 20, so four out of these five chapters, you're going to have a reoccurring phrase. And what is that phrase that we see? Actually, there's two, but what's the first phrase we see? Okay, so the idea that there's no king in Israel, okay? And then, but accompanied with that is another phrase. So that's right. So as a result, everybody's going to do what is good in their own eyes. So that they are basically, they're ruling themselves. So what it states is true. They did do what was right in their own eyes. We'll see that through the examples that we're going to look at. But one thing that's false about this is they did have a king. They just weren't serving him. There was one that had the right to rule over them, you know, and unlike other kings, earthly kings, it was inherent in this king. It was not a delegated authority. So they did have a king, they just weren't serving him. Are these times any different in that aspect when you think about us, when you look around us? We see a lot of people of the world, not just the world, but they do what they want to do. You know, they want to have no remorse or no consequence over their actions. Why is that? What is the cause of this? They don't recognize that they too have a king, and that's why they're not serving him, because they don't know that they have one. They're deceived. You know, we recognize there's a great deceiver, and unfortunately that's their king because of the life that they choose to live. Now we can see in the verses listed that this was displeasing and considered evil in the sight of the Lord. There's some verses that were listed on the lesson in 1 Samuel. Well, most of them in 1 Samuel. Let's turn over there. 1 Samuel 8, we'll start there, verses 6 through 8, says, "But the king was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said," the thing, not the king. I've got king on the mind. Okay. "But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day I brought them out of Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also.'" So we're going to see as we build upon these verses that what they were doing was displeasing to God and was considered evil to God. If we go over a couple of chapters, chapter 10, verse 19, it says, "But you today reject your God, who delivers you from all your calamities and all your distress. Yet you have said, 'No, but set a king over us.' Now therefore, present yourselves before the Lord." So again, we're seeing what they're doing is not pleasing. Chapter 12. Chapter 12, starting in verse 17. It says, "Is it not the wheat harvest today? I will call to the Lord, that he may send thunder and rain. Then you will know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord, by asking for yourselves a king." So Samuel called to the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day. And all that the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. Then all the people said to Samuel, "Pray for your servants to the Lord your God, so that we may not die. For we have added to all our sins this evil by asking for ourselves a king." And Samuel said to the people, "Do not fear. You have committed all this evil, yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart." And we can also see in Hosea is listed there. Hosea 13:10. "Where now is your king, that he may save you in all your cities, and your judges in whom you requested? Give me a king and princes. I gave you a king in my anger, and took him away in my wrath." So we can see in these sections how the Lord felt about them asking for a king. Because the truth of the matter is they have a king. And that's what was stated. We already mentioned that they had a king. We'll go back to 1 Samuel 8 where we started. In 1 Samuel 8, verse 7. Now, we're familiar with some of the terms they use, the "not but" idiom. It said, we recognize that the emphasis is behind whatever is behind the "but." And it said, "They have not rejected you, Samuel, but they have rejected me," God speaking. That's the emphasis. They have rejected God as their king. And then in 10:19, as we already read, same idea. "But you today rejected your God." So we're seeing this over and over, that they had a king, but they were rejecting him. Let's turn over to Psalms. If we look at Psalms, we'll see some things about who they should be following, who should be their king. Now, this was a Psalm of David, verse 2. Says, "Heed the sound of my cry for help, my King and my God, for to thee I do pray." David recognized who is the king. Let's go over to chapter 10, verse 16. And these are listed on your lesson, 10:16. "The Lord is king forever and ever. Nations have perished from his land." than chapter 24. Says, lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O gate, and lift them up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord of hosts, He is the King of glory. Chapter 29, 29:10. Hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be Thou my helper. And one more verse regarding this. We'll go over to chapter 44. 44, 4 through 8. It says, Thou art my King, O God. Command victories for Jacob. Through Thee we will push back our adversaries. Through Thy name we will trample down those who rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, nor will my sword save me. But Thou hast saved us from our adversaries. And Thou hast put to shame those who hate us. In God we have boasted all day long, and we will give thanks to Thy name forever. This is who should have been their king. This is who should be our king. And they knew this. His might and His power had already been proven over and over to them. They knew who He was and what He deserved. They just weren't serving Him. Now, as we read chapters 17 through 21, we're going to see that. We're going to see that they're not serving this king. We see the degraded spiritual and moral state that followed Joshua's death. Remember what we read in Judges 2? Let's go back to Judges 2 when we were... that speaks of Joshua's death. Let's read verse 7. It said, And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the great work of the Lord, which He had done for Israel. So they served Him during the days of Joshua and during the days of the elders that survived Joshua. But then jump down to verse 10. It says that all the generations also were gathered to their fathers. So all these that it spoke of are now gone. And then it said there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which He had done for Israel. Consider these things that are described in these five chapters. Things that are against God's will. Sin. In this portrayal of the moral and spiritual condition of the nation, we're going to observe some of the following things. First off, we see idolatry. That's in chapters 17 and 18, the first two chapters we look at. When we were talking about Micah, what Micah did because there was no king in Israel, and he did as he wanted. Let's read 17:1. Judges 17:1. Now there was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. Then jump down to verse 5. It says, and the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household idols, and consecrated one of his sons that he might become his priest. Is that acceptable to God? Okay. Was that in his plan for this? No. And do you remember how he was able to make these images? So, number one, idolatry, what he was doing, that was wrong. But then how he came about getting these idols. 17:2. Says, and he said to his mother, the 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing, behold, the silver is with me. I took it. So, we had stealing. And it wasn't limited just to him. So, Micah steals from his mom. And then, if we go over a chapter in chapter 18, verse 20. It says, and the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the household idols and the graven image and went among the people. So we see here that the priest stole the idols. Really, if we back up to chapter 18, verse 18, it started before him. Said, when these went into Micah's house and took the graven image, the ephod, and the household idols, and the molten image, the priest said to them, what are you doing? So we see that these men, the sons of Dan, they were taking this first. And then the priest felt it was okay as well. So we see this idea of stealing, this idea of idolatry. And all of this goes back to the things that we're talking about, things that were listed in four of these five chapters. And that's that people were doing what was right in their own eyes. Sacrilege. Back in chapter 17, we can look at verses 10 through 13. 17:10. It says, Micah then said to him, dwell with me and be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 pieces of silver a year, a suit of clothes, and your maintenance. So the Levite went in. The Levite agreed to live with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. So Micah consecrated the Levites. The young man became his priest and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, now I know that the Lord will prosper me, seeing I have a Levite as priest. And then when we get into the next chapter, this idea of unbelief, chapter 18, verse 1, talking about the tribe of Dan, it said, in those days there was no king of Israel. Again, we see this. In those days, the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in. So they were seeking for themselves this inheritance. If we go down to verse 19, kind of the idea we see pride and covetousness and lust or lust for power. When speaking of the Levite, the sons of Dan appeal to some of these things. Let's look at 18:19. Judges 18:19. Says, and they said to him, be silent, put your hand over your mouth and come with us. And be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man or to be priest to a tribe and a family of Israel. So they appealed to this. We see in chapter 19 the idea of those in this area not being hospitable. If we go to 19, verse 15, 19:15 through 20. Now, this is talking about when the Levite came to this area, the Levite with his concubine. Okay, so in verse 15, it says, they turned aside there in order to enter and lodge in Gibeah. When they entered, they sat down in the open square of the city, for no one took them into the house or into his house to spend the night. Then behold, an old man was coming out of the field from his work at evening. Now the man was from the hill country of Ephraim, and he was staying in Gibeah. But the men of the place were Benjamites. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the traveler in the open square of the city. And the old man said, where are you going, and where do you come from? And he said to him, we are passing from Bethlehem in Judah to the remote part of the hill country of Ephraim, for I am from there, and I went to Bethlehem in Judah. But I am now going to my house, and no man will take me into his house. Yet there is both straw and fodder for our donkeys, and also bread and wine for me, your maidservant, and the young man who is with your servants. There is no lack of anything. And the old man said, peace to you. Only let me take care of all your needs. However, do not spend the night in the open square. So this older gentleman that came out of the field, he extends some hospitality, but you see that it's mentioned that none of these others in the town were extending that. So we can see kind of the idea of not being hospitable. That was the least of the worries. So we also have homosexuality. We see that when we get into verse 22. We see what the men of the city wanted. Verse 22, while they were making merry, behold, the men of the city, certain worthless fellows, surrounded the house, pounding the door, and they spoke to the owner of the house, the old man, saying, bring out the man who came into your house that we may have relations with him. Then the man, the owner of the house, went out to them and said to them, no, my fellows, please do not act so wickedly. Since this man has come into my house, do not commit this act of folly. So what the old man said in order to protect the Levite is in verse 24. He says, here is my virgin daughter and his concubine. Please let me bring them out that you may ravish them and do to them whatever you wish. But do not commit such an act of folly against this man. And then, I'm sure I've got questions about this, so we can come back to this spot. And if you have any questions, please bring them out. But if you don't, I'm moving. Okay?
I thought that was a wicked act.
What the older gentleman is doing? Okay. Okay, and that's something for us to consider. You think about, okay, so this guy did have some sort of morality, the older gentleman, and he was being hospitable. The fact that his daughter is a virgin should say something, but what he did, I agree. I don't know why he did what he did. Maybe he thought by offering that would deter him. I don't know if that was the reasoning. But, like you said, Let's remember the verse we keep seeing over and over and over. Did he, at this point, fall into the same thing? You know, people did what was right in their sight. So, but that's something that should challenge us in our thinking and be a warning to us to be careful, you know, in our reason, in our reasoning and in the way we handle things. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
And that could be why they weren't extending the hospitality, if they didn't want that brought into their home, the possibility of what this old man was now facing.
Okay. Possibly. I mean, as far as what the scripture states, it does say that, you know, he warns them don't stay in the square. So that's a possibility. And any other comments, thoughts? I'm opening the floor. Okay.
And same thing about the daughter was said. But of course, you know, that didn't happen because the angels were with him and struck him all blind.
Yeah, so why
that happening and released another bad poor decisions as well.
Yeah.
Like what later happened after she was dead, he invited her and sent her out.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, this is evil, this is wicked, this
yeah, has never been seen, yeah. Okay. So we definitely see, I mean, as far as why these men say that and think that that's okay, I've got the answer. I don't know. That's the answer I'm sticking with. I'm not sure of that. But we see that. And I'm thinking still that it kind of maybe ties back to that's what they did, what they thought was right in their sight. So I'm not sure on that. Now in verse 25, unless there's more. Okay. So in verse 25, the idea of brutality, the men would not listen, so the man seized his concubine and brought her out to them. And they raped her and abused her all night until morning, then let her go at the approach of dawn. So then we see this idea of rape. And verse 26 says, as the day began to dawn, the woman came out and fell down at the doorway of the man's house where his master was until full daylight. So then we'll also notice in the following verses that it was also murder. When her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go on his way, then behold, his concubine was laying at the doorway of the house with her hands on the threshold. And he said to her, "Get up and let us go." But there was no answer. Then he placed her on the donkey and the man arose and went to his home. And then we'll note what he did to her, like what Michael was talking about in these last two verses. It said that when he entered his house, he took a knife and laid a hold of his concubine and cut her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout the territory of Israel. And it came about that all who saw it said, "Nothing like this has ever happened or been seen from the day when the sons of Israel came up from the land of Egypt to this day. Consider it, take counsel, and speak up." So when we get into the last two chapters, we see some of the reason behind what's going to take place in these chapters is because of what was happening, what was going on. Let's read chapter 20, verse 1. It says, "Then all the sons of Israel from Dan to Beersheba, including the land of Gilead, came out. And the congregation assembled as one man to the Lord in Mizpah. And the chiefs of all the people, even all the tribes of Israel, took their stand in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword. Now the sons of Benjamin heard that the sons of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. And the sons of Israel said, 'Tell us, how did the wickedness take place?' So the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, 'I came with my concubine to spend the night in Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. But the men in Gibeah rose up against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me. Instead, they ravished my concubine so that she died. And I took hold of my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout the land of Israel's inheritance. For they have committed a lewd and disgraceful act in Israel. Behold, all you sons of Israel, give your advice and counsel here.' Then all the people arose as one man, saying, 'Not one of us will go to his tent, nor will any of us return to his house. But now, this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot.' And they were going to go, they were going to do this because of what we had discussed. And they even mention again in verse 10b, it says, 'For all the disgraceful acts that they have committed in Israel.' So they're going to go up against their brothers. And note that the sons of Israel are doing this to remove this wickedness. Verse 14. And the sons of Benjamin gathered from the cities of to Gibeah to go out to battle against the sons of Israel. So they're going to fight. And note the amount of numbers listed here. It says, "And from the cities on that day, the sons of Benjamin were numbered 26,000 men who draw the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who were numbered 700 choice men. Out of all these people, 700 choice men were left-handed. Each one could sling a stone at a hare and not miss it. Then the men of Israel, besides Benjamin, were numbered 400,000 men who draw the sword. All these were men of war." So they're going to battle. But where does Israel's trust in this matter lie? You know, we stated that all the chapters, except for this one, said that men were doing what was right in their own sight. It wasn't stated in this chapter. And what's interesting is some of the things we're going to see here as far as how Israel handles this. Where does their trust lie? In verse 18, what's it say that they do? It says, "Now the sons of Israel arose, went up to Bethel, and inquired of God, and said, 'Who shall go up first for us to battle against the sons of Benjamin?' Then the Lord said, 'Judah shall go up first.' So the sons of Israel rose in the morning and camped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin, and the men of Israel arrayed for battle against them at Gibeah. Then the sons of Benjamin came out of Gibeah and fell to the ground on that day, 22,000 men of Israel. So men of Israel ask God, and they say, yeah, Judah go up against them first. And then they lose 22,000 men. But the sons of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening and inquired of the Lord, saying, shall we again draw near for battle against the sons of my brother Benjamin? And the Lord said, go up against them. And again, they inquired of the Lord, and he says, go up against them. So then you have verse 24. Then the sons of Israel came against the sons of Benjamin the second day, and Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah the second day and fell to the ground again, 18,000 men of the sons of Israel. All these drew the sword. Then all the sons of Israel and all the people went up and came to Bethel and wept. Thus they remained there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. So, again, they're going to inquire of the Lord. Verse 27, the sons of Israel inquired of the Lord. And for the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, Aaron's son, stood before it and ministered in those days, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the sons of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease? So they've inquired of the Lord twice already, and he says, no, you go, you fight. And they lose a lot of men. So again though, that's who they have their, that's where their trust lies. Again, they go to the Lord and they seek his counsel. They inquire of him. So they did not give up on that. And when they say, shall I again go out and battle against the sons of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease? The Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. And then the following verses, they have success. So the Lord was with them, and they had success. Now, we had mentioned that in this time, you know, we saw all of these evil things going on, you know, that they weren't hospitable and all these different things. But in the midst of all of that, besides what we mentioned, what this older guy suggested, in the midst of all that, we did see some hospitality. Wasn't this older gentleman hospitable to the Levite? It might have only been him, but we saw some hospitality, that he was hospitable to travelers. If we go back to chapter 19, verse 21, so he took him into his house and gave his donkeys fodder, and they washed their feet and ate and drank. So he was hospitable to them. There was some type of sense of right and wrong. You know, in verse 23, the man of the house stated to the guys, no, my fellows, please do not act so wickedly. You know, so he saw their wickedness in these other people. So he had some sense of right and wrong. And we see that there's some sense of morality and religion. We saw that in chapter 20 when we talked about Israel as they waged war on their brothers, as they waged war on the tribe of Benjamin because of what had taken place in Gibeah. And then at the end here, we'll see that there was some compassion. Israel had felt bad for what they had done to Benjamin because they were almost cut off and almost non-existent. And then they want to find some wives for them. And, you know, go over to chapter 21, verse 18. It says, "But we," talking about Israel, "cannot give them wives of our daughters, for the sons of Israel have sworn, saying, 'Cursed is he who gives a wife to Benjamin.'" So they're not allowed. They feel bad. They're trying to figure out how to get them some wives, but they know they can't give it to them. So what is the answer? Verse 20 and 21. "And they commanded the sons of Benjamin, saying, 'Go and lie in wait in the vineyards and watch. And behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to take part in the dances, then you shall come out to the out of the vineyards, and each of you shall catch his wife from the daughters of Shiloh and go to the land of Benjamin.'" And then what Israel will do: "And it shall come about when their fathers or their brothers come to explain to us, that we shall say to them, 'Give them to us voluntarily, because we did not take for each man of Benjamin a wife in battle, nor did you give them to them, else you would now be guilty.'" So this is their reasoning on how this would be okay. And then I'm about to get buzzed. So we see at the very end of this chapter, in this whole section of these five chapters, again, it reminds us that in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in the sight of his own eyes. So in the midst of these times, we've been talking about these cycles. The Lord, he had raised up judges and men and women of faith, and the cycles took place. We had the sin and the suffering, the supplication and salvation. And we too live in times of wickedness. Are we going to give in? Or are we going to, as we read in Joshua, are we going to dare to stand like Joshua? "For as for me and my house," what he stated, "we will serve the Lord." Will we be the strength and the example to those about us? So that's, we tied it all together. Next class will be Ruth. Will be our last class. I have lessons in the back. Thank you.